through 90%, and that somehow it's going to solve all of the problems in the United States.
Absolutely not, but I guess the question is, do you like even think it's worth dealing with? Because I had this call come in, I don't know if you caught like at the end of the show a couple weeks ago, where it's like, almost like, what are you complaining about? Like, you know, like why, like when people were talking about the, you know, they had the fast food walkout
slash strike or whatever it's called.
And it's like, I forget, I think it was actually the Show Sucks guy. They called and was talking and, you know, like, don't worry about that. Are we, you know, if you raise wages, that's just going to drive down, you know, that's going to raise prices. If you give people health care, they're going to cut their employment roles and that stuff. But it's like, don't worry about that issue. Just point out what the problem is with, like, somebody saying let's raise taxes. But I would think that there are other ways to deal with the evaporation of the middle class, that we should actually at least think about it, not just kind of shirk it off to, if you raise taxes, that's not going to solve the problem, so what next?
Well, I think that's, you know, I think there has to be a new paradigm shift in thinking. And what that, you know, how that's going to turn out, I don't know. But people like pointing out, for example, how great the Nordic countries are. Maybe we should try to go to that model.
I don't know, I haven't.
Eat a bunch of big-lipped fish?
Right.
What are they doing?
Well, for example, the main thing is single-payer health care.
Well, I think the argument that a lot of people have in America, where there's this notion that we're not a socialist country, but we pay taxes in a lot of ways like we are a socialist country.
Well, that's true.
But there's a lot of the benefits of that that we do not receive, because, you know, these Nordic countries, they have all these all this socialism, right? But they don't have these huge militaries, you know, have to pay for.
She can explain about, even in Ukraine, for example, Victoria can explain about if you're pregnant, or, you know. Go ahead and tell them about that.
Oh, like, I was surprised about here.
Matrimony is marriage.
Yeah.
It happens before the maternity leave.
Right.
Yeah,
first comes marriage.
Yeah. About this. Because in Ukraine, you stopped work when you have 6 months pregnancy. And the company, all company, private or like government, they paid you full your salary before you gave the birth to your baby, okay? Like 9 months, they stop 6 months, 3 months, you have full salary and you are at home. For first baby in your family, government paid you it's like $3,000 for first baby. Like, if you have second baby, government paid you $8,000. Like, for everything, $8,000. It's like if you have third baby, it's like 12.
Cha-ching.
Really.
Cha-ching.
And like in Russia, I think it's higher than in Ukraine.
But do people
government
have
pay.
Babies just so they can get money?
No, not. I don't think so.
You
it's
know, in America,
just,
that's what they do. People have babies just so they can get a baby.
Yeah, but it's not,
okay.
It's not cash like that. That's for damn sure.
And after that.
But then I remember there's a story not too long ago, and it was a story from Russia, and I apologize for interjecting this, but I believe if you had a child and you were Russian, they would buy you a new refrigerator, because they want folks to have children, because there's an issue with the declining birth rates.
Right.
So in Ukraine,
they
clearly
don't want an immigration problem.
Clearly they have a policy where they want people to have children. They're trying to make it as easy as possible for people to have babies. I mean, 12 grand for your third kid?
Yeah, 12 grand.
I mean, and that's 12 grand American?
Yeah, American. It's like, greenness is like, I don't remember.
Which is
grand.
A good chunk of Ukrainian cash, right?
Yeah, but not. You don't have like full cash for like one moment. You understand?
Oh, right,
it's
right,
like,
right.
Like for example,
they give
like,
you checks over time.
Yeah, they give checks like $1,000 for like you need to buy like
some
stuff
diapers,
for
right.
baby, and then like when baby grow, like they give checks for this. It's not for like one time you have all $5,000.
There's $8,000. Pitch the baby up and walk off with $8,000.
Start working on the third one.
And then, and after that, like in Ukraine, like you can have like a vacation. It's like 3 years, and like then you can return the same position that you was in your company,
right.
Because the company save your place, your working place for three years.
Wow.
Like first year you have full salary that you had before, and second I think it's like half of salary, and third year I think it's half of salary too, but I don't think so, maybe 40%, but it's like after that like you can return to the same position that you was.
And you're free to return before that, or you can go back early if you want. Or,
yeah.
But they give you that support if you want to take that time.
Yeah.
And let's not think for a second that there are companies. There are
all companies. It's like in government. If you are a teacher, doctor, everybody.
But there are people. There are women who have jobs with those same benefits in America. It's this is not a legal requirement of companies in America to provide these. Right, that's the difference. In the Ukraine, the society, or in a lot of European countries, the society has gone, well, we've decided that it's best that women raise their children when they're very little, and they don't put them in daycare when they're newborns so they can go back to work.
Right.
It's not normal.
It's not normal, is right. But in America, that's considered to be normal now, is that you go back to work. Maternity leave in America is not 3 years. It's not 9 months. It's not 6 months. It's 6 weeks.
Right.
And
do
then
you think, is it normal?
I don't personally think it's normal.
It's not normal.
It's only here.
It's not
right.
in Europe. It's, for example, my cousin, she has a baby now. And, like, a company gave her husband 1 month vacation to support his wife.
Right.
There's some family values, those socialists or something.
Yeah, there's
it's
something
like
else
in,
right.
in Great Britain, in
right.
London.
Right.
And,
no,
some of those countries, they'll also let some of that maternity time be split with dad, too. So mom and dad can both be at home for a good chunk of time, because these things are important in regards to building the family. But the point, you know, we kind of got into this, talking about this idea of the evaporation of the middle class here in this country and these income inequalities.
Well, I was just talking about, I mean, I use Walton as an example because they're like the bully boys or the punching bag of the, what I call the...
What about the Koch brothers?
Well, with either one, but, you know, you got to remember that, like the Waltons, their wealth is tied up in the value of Walmart stock. If the company went belly up tomorrow, I'm sure they're diversified enough they wouldn't be hurting too bad.
Man, you're really making me feel bad about the Waltons all of a sudden.
Well, I just think it's too simple to simply say, you know, let's go back to when it was 90% tax rate on the wealthy.
I don't know that that's the solution. I'm not saying that's the solution, but there is a pretty big problem in this country because there's a large chunk of the population who is poor and uneducated, who has absolutely no future in this economy. They're either going to sell drugs, go to prison, or catch bullets. They have three opportunities for their future. And since this is a reality in every single city in this country, you know, what is then the solution? And we're finding this in the exurbs in the countryside now as well.
Well, I mean, the problem is, I would be...
Because this is, I mean, the reality here then becomes is the Waltons have changed government policy, have... use people like the Waltons, if we're going to use them as a punching bag, we'll use them as an example as well, have used government to change the way it operates and removed a lot of the safeguards and protections for the little guy in this economy. And that's globalization, that's, you know, a lot of different things.
Yeah, but I don't think
we don't need to go over, you know, in detail right now.
Yeah, but I don't think 300 million Americans or 315 million Americans can compete against 7 billion people.
Oh, I don't think we can. I'm not asking us to.
Well, I know, but we are, though. We're being forced to compete.
Right, and it's clearly not going to work.
Well, I agree. So the question is, what is the solution? How do you take somebody that, you know, you can go to school here for 12 years for free, technically.
And get a great education in the process.
Well, I know, but what if you're in the school and you don't want to be there? You don't want to be there. You just quit.
Right.
How do you make that person stay so they can get a job at McDonald's? But you know.
But that's the point. You don't need a high school degree to get a job in McDonald's.
This is true.
I don't know
how you reorganize society. People way smarter than I have been working on it for decades.
I'm just saying that when people are taking issue with,
you go back and you look at what the people who are not necessarily way smarter, but organized, that have made the changes in our society. I mean, if you go back and you look at, I would say, let's start before World War II, and you know, everybody talked about, you know, the New Deal, and all the different projects and things that were being put in place there, and that all kind of stopped because we went to World War II, and then, you know, it kind of immediately shifted into the prison. You can add prison into the whole war machine, the military industrial complex. But you know, we immediately shifted, or almost instantly shifted, from New Deal type of government spending, making work for people that we can still see some of the examples of when you look at some of the parks and monuments and whatnot and roads and things like that. And then you turn around, we got into this war thing, and then that's where we have stayed. That is where we have stayed. We've poured all this money into military budgets that are kind of the same kind of make work stuff, but they don't add to our economy, really. You know what I'm saying? Like, we spent, over the last 50 years, how much of the military-industrial hardware, you know, the weapons and ammunition, that then goes fallow? I mean, it's like, you don't need these bullets. They don't fit the gun that we don't use anymore. We spent all this time and energy in building those things, and then they're just gone, as opposed to if we had spent that time and energy building our infrastructure, like the New Deal was doing, right? I mean, that's what the New Deal was doing, was providing work to build this country. So we're still kind of doing that, but on a military stance that doesn't really
The New Deal, like for the Hoover Dam, I don't think you could build a Hoover Dam now. It would get sued to death.
But you could build some sewers. I mean, you could. I mean, Kansas City's not the only city that has this crumbling infrastructure problem.
No, but then that comes down to it used to be like to dig a ditch, you had to hire the way.
But what Russ is saying is that, you know, the Sierra Club would file a lawsuit saying that it's affecting the migration of, you know, deer mice.
Yeah, if you were
going
to try and build a Hoover Dam out in the middle of here or over there, but I'm talking about right here, right now, where we are, what we need in cities all across this country.
But Russ would not, you can't argue, I mean, you're not arguing with the whole idea of the fact that we went from, we have a militarized economy, right? I mean, you see that, right?
Well, right, but there's also...
We have the Keynesian economics that was the New Deal, which is this idea of government deficit spending, has been transferred from building infrastructure in America to building military weapons for the whole world.
Right.
I mean, that's, and it's been that way.
It's still Keynesian. I mean, it's still Keynesian. It's still government money being spent. It's just we don't see it now.
Yeah, but that's, that just.
But you're talking about a new paradigm of thinking, right?
Well, and yeah, but I'm talking about, for example, single payer healthcare system, not this hybrid system that we seem to have that is going to get even more screwed up, in my opinion, than the Obamacare, because it's not it's some kind of Band-Aid system. You know,
nobody knows what it's going to be like, except for the people that say that it's either going to be the worst thing in the world,
or
which
the
greatest
thing.
It's probably going to be a horrible situation, because it doesn't seem as though the medical insurance companies should be rewarded for their previous behavior by getting however many tens more millions of customers required by law.
Well, I think that we need some kind of, I mean, obviously, I'm a libertarian with a small L, which means that, in my opinion, we need some kind of government, obviously.
Are there small L libertarians?
Well, I am.
Did you just make that up?
I think you did.
I've never heard anyone ever say that before. I'm a small L, lowercase L libertarian, but why not?
Well, right, I mean, I believe
it shows growth, because you've always heard of small D Democrats and small R Republicans. They're growing.
Well, I'm for obviously legalization of drugs.
You should clearly be the chairman of the Missouri Libertarian Party.
Yeah, I should be in the small L.
With ideas like that, Russ.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just, you know, we have to have a situation where, in my opinion, I don't know how.
But you're saying, I mean, you're complaining about these liberals on the Huffington Post.
Well, the extreme liberals.
All right, crying about income inequality, but then you're
I have a solution for it.
A new paradigm and a way of thinking.
Well, right. I have a solution.
What's the solution? Get to the nut, buddy.
Well, I think what it needs to have, we need to have like a everybody would get a certain amount of money, regardless of your situation. You'd have to be like 18. You would get a certain amount of money, a stipend, once a year of say like $50,000, and this could be paid for by closing overseas bases, cutting off all foreign aid. I mean, all foreign aid would be about $50 billion. Quit feeding people overseas. I'm just saying it could be done within, cut the military budget by, say, 30%, because you could do that. Give everybody that amount of money and say, you're on your own. If you can't make it with $50,000 a year for doing nothing, you know, you're on your own. No more food stamps for
this
you.
This is really your solution?
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Well, I'm just saying it's better. It's
that's
a solution.
The kind of thing that in a creating a society, I could see that. I could see what you're, how you're.
It's not going to work though.
It's not going to work because of the politics involved. Because there's too many people making money right now to give that up. I mean to go with that. But I could kind of see in a like in a drawing board kind of world where you get to start from scratch, but. That would be very difficult to get people to change over because, like you were talking about the healthcare thing, the reason that we have this healthcare debacle that we have. Well, I'm even going to stop short of calling it a debacle because I don't know how it's going to unfold because we really don't know. I mean, we see a lot of overreacting. I mean, people going like, "Well, I'm going to cut all my employees because I'm going to have to buy healthcare." Well, you've got people now making these. Like, they're rushing to do something and ahead of time, and they haven't seen it unfold yet. You know what I mean? It's like they're reacting to the fear of people like you were talking earlier about Michael Savage and other, mm-hmm. you know, who have constantly beat the drum to say that, like, there's people who, a lot of people, who don't know that the Affordable Care Act is even actually going to take place. They think it's been repealed. Because they've tried to repeal it 50 times, you know what I mean? And it's so people are just operating on like this fear of what it might be and what it could be. Because I guess there's reports now that like the deficit has gone down, even though we are constantly reminded that
they say that the federal debt has remained the same for over 3 months. The same, it's down to the penny, because there's a you know a congressional debt limit. That's set, that the Congress raises the debt ceiling, which I've advocated just raising it to infinity. I think we could just, we could stop a lot of the gridlock in Washington by just raising the debt ceiling to infinity. But it's been at the same dollar amount for 3 months now. So the idea,
like with the sequestration.
But what people are saying that are looking at that going, that's impossible. there's no way that all of a sudden they've been able to stop this bleeding of the budget, this idea of, you know, overspending every single day of every single year, you know, that there are really cooking books now.
She could give you an example of what healthcare is like in Ukraine, just for a little bit of a difference.
No, for example, yeah, I've been here at hospital for one day, and we have I've been there and almost without any.
They don't have microphones in the Ukraine. It's okay. And then you gotta tilt it up.
Used to be a knob that would lock that in.
kind of tilt it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. Do you remember how much we need? $9,000.
It was $9,000 for one day in the hospital.
Yeah, $9,000 for one day at hospital here.
Sure.
Yeah. And for example, my mom been at hospital with her surgery 21 day. It was for everything MRT, X-rays, blah blah blah, analysis, everything, surgery. I paid with medicines $1,000 for 21 days. What's different?
That's unheard of. You spend $1,000 a day at the dentist. I mean.
Yeah. For example, dentist we've been at dentist.
But the reason why it's so perverted like that is very simple. It's because you have insurance companies involved.
Yeah.
It's the only reason.
What only reason about this?
Oh boy!
Yeah, because you're taking out you're inserting middlemen who keep raising prices. I mean, when you've got a hospital that can charge the insurance company, $100, I'm probably not that much anymore. Probably somebody's exercised some discretion and it's down to $20 for a bottle of aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't got to charge. I'm not going to you and saying, all right, I'm gonna need $20 because you got a headache and you want an aspirin. You go to the insurance company and you just go this is the charge we're charging, and it just kind of works its way up. It's
kind of creates a situation where you need to have insurance.
Right.
It's like a scam.
Yeah.
Well, right, except when you say scam, that almost sounds like it's the plan, and I don't know that that's the plan. You know what I mean? I think it's like if I'm the hospital and I got two people here in front of me and I'm like, okay, you don't have insurance, you have insurance, and I'm able to raise these prices up in order to I guess it is a scam in that in order for me to justify selling that to her for $20 and charging the insurance, I got to sell it to you for $20.
But
otherwise,
the scam
is revealed.
Your lovely wife doesn't have your...
I have.
Wonderful United States Postal Service.
No, she does. She does.
Yeah,
and it was still $9,000? That was the copay?
No.
It was full, charging $9,000.
Yeah, but how much did you pay out of pocket?
I paid $3,000.
That
or
was
more.
The three grand was the copay?
Yeah. Three or more. Or four, yeah.
No, it was around 1,000.
No, more. No, it's more. It was almost 3,000, something like this.
I don't want to ask what happened.
Yeah, bogged down in details.
But generally speaking, if you...
Because the hospital was not covering this list.
It's a long story.
It's
I want to get into
right.
that.
Right. But right. generally, if you don't have insurance, you go to the hospital and you say, I don't have insurance. They go, oh, you don't have insurance? Well, they get the other
You're
price...
the wrong hospital.
They get the other price list out.
Right.
And you don't get in charge the same amount if you don't have insurance. All hospitals generally are like that. They have a cash payment price. And then a lot of hospitals don't require you to pay the full amount of that either.
Yeah, but that brings up a bigger question, though, and that is, as the society here is getting older disproportionately, at what whether it's private, public, a combination, you know, at what value did you put on human life to keep somebody alive?
$29.95 Is that really the? It's going to be a problem
sometime here with longevity drugs, new techniques. Some of the new cancer drugs are super expensive. And it might give you like 6 months, or you know, an extra 2 or 3 months of life.
Well, that's one of the arguments, is that you spend the majority of the money on healthcare in the last 3 months of life.
And there's another paradigm shift that's required. I mean, ultimately, a lot of this has to do with, you know, we the people have to, like, wake up and say no mas. I mean, we got to say, nope, that's not working.
Well, we the people have to wake up and stop poisoning ourselves and living these incredibly unhealthy lifestyles. This issue of health insurance in this country and our health in general would not be a problem if we weren't strung out on pharmaceuticals and processed food. That's how I feel. If people didn't view, Mountain Dew and Coca-Cola as a way to, you know, live your day, and they didn't eat fast food and a bunch of processed junk, we wouldn't have these problems with our health in this country. We wouldn't be dealing with this. I mean, and this is not just physical health. This is mental health as well. You know, this is something that I think has really been avoided in this entire health conversation. As we've, you know, gone from, you know, Obamacare, and now we're going to the future, the government could actually do some things to help change the health of America. One of the things that would be is to stop the subsidies of high fructose corn syrup through the farm bills. And same thing with soybean growth. I mean, that's just partially hydrogenated soybean oils. These things are literally what's killing America.
Well, when I was growing up in the 70s, the fat population here was a lot lower. And some of that has to do with what you're talking about, but some of it also has to do with, like when I was a kid, if I wanted to change the TV channel, I had to get up to do it. There wasn't a remote control.
Right.
You know, like the lawnmower, I had the old manual kind. You had to actually push. And now people are driving around in their...
That may be part of
well,
it.
Well, it is part of
you
it.
You know, I mean, that may certainly be part of it. And the fact that we've turned to technology and we have a much more sedentary lifestyle than we used to. But there is no question in the last generation, the way we eat has changed dramatically. And even the processed foods, even the Hungry Man TV dinners have become much more processed than they were, you know, a generation ago. They don't have even the very small amount of whole food ingredients that they used to. And this is a huge thing. It's the food that you eat. The food that you eat, that determines your health more than anything else, more than what health insurance you have, whatever it is. Because there are plenty of people. Look at a place like Haiti. Can you believe there are millions of people living there? They don't even have food. Why are there millions of people living there without even food? And then they have many people that live into their 70s, 80s, and beyond, right? Because they don't have a bunch of processed food and medicine. You know, they're eating very, very simple foods, and they don't have this pharmaceutical reality that we have here in this country. And that's a huge part of it. Huge part of it.
Yeah, but part of that is the farmers here are so productive.
Yeah, but productive in creating food that is not edible
well,
or nutritious. I mean, that's the reality of it. You know?
Well, I understand that, but what do you do with the tons and tons and tons of coal? I mean, we're going to have, like, this year is going to be like the bumper crop of the century.
But as a
what do you do with all the
small L libertarian? Yeah. Wouldn't you say that that's on them? Figure out another product. Figure out another. I mean, you're falsely inflating the market through these subsidies that.
Well, I agree
about
with that, but. Part of that also goes the farm bill also includes food stamps.
Yeah,
that's under the same number. So you have to actually look at what are farmers actually getting paid through the subsidies, and there were logical reasons for the subsidies. You know, to keep the prices stable. I mean, I think to his point about some people have to take more responsibility for themselves. You can't expect to go to McDonald's 3 times a day and not get fat.
There's more of that small L libertarianism
Well, right, but you got to take some. You got to take some responsibility for yourself.
No, and I agree. I'm right there with you. But the United States Department of Agriculture did a study a couple months ago. They said that it was actually cheaper to eat out than it was to go to the grocery store and buy your own food.
Oh, I agree. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
It's less expensive to eat out.
I think that's true.
Okay, now what does that mean to you? Are we talking about eating sandwiches in the bathroom at Quick Trip so you don't have to pay for them? I mean, seriously.
I think what that means is that you've got to factor in the value meals and the value menus. You know what I'm saying? That's how they're able to eat out. You know, because that goes directly to your point that the food that they're eating is not healthy for them.
I'm a full-grown man. I'm going to have to, if I'm going to go to McDonald's and eat off the value meal, we're talking, you know, I'm going to have to get five $1 items to feel full, and that's one meal.
We ate at a restaurant.
So now what do we, now I'm spending $15 a day if I'm eating three meals.
Right, but if you go to the grocery store, $15.
Multiply that.
Just $15. I don't know that you're gonna
in a day?
What are you gonna get? Tell me what you're gonna get, because I'll try.
No, now we're over at $100. We're over $100 a week, right? So now we're $420 for the month. I can eat very well for $400 a month. I don't spend $400. I mean, I spend for the whole family probably $600 or $700 a month.
On groceries. $600 or $700 a month.
And that's buying.
I'm in the middle of a technical blackout, so I can't check my account right now. But I'm pretty sure we're somewhere around that amount for the month to put groceries on the table and whatnot. And we've got way more processed stuff than we should have. I mean, I'm the first to admit that, but. But if you're spending $800, what's that? That's
But we're talking. I mean, that's so.
It's $30 a day.
If you got four kids, or if you got four people in your family,
25.
Right? If you got four people in your family, and you're eating at McDonald's three times a day, this is just eating at McDonald's three times a day.
Right. You're gonna spend
a lot of money.
Yeah. I don't understand how, for the love of God, you could say that it would be
cheaper to eat out,
and then of course everyone.
Well, for example,
what you're missing is the long term consequence of eating at fast food restaurants every day.
No, I think we're in agreement with you that's not,
because that's the big thing.
Ideal.
That's truly the big thing.
No, we saw an eight ounce. We went to eat before we came here tonight, and we saw on the menu an 8 ounce sirloin steak with potatoes, vegetables for like $12.
$13.
I don't think you could beat that at home.
How much do you think sirloin steak, I mean an 8 ounce sirloin steak, how much do you think sirloin steak is per pound?
Well, it depends on where you want to go.
Four or five bucks a pound?
Right. So then we're
talking. But I'm just saying, but you've also got
$12,
to take into account.
We're talking, so let's say $6 a pound for that sirloin steak, for getting something that's of high quality.
Right.
That's probably what you're going to pay.
Right.
So that's 1 pound of steak. So that's double 8 ounces for $6. So and then how much do you think a potato costs? You can get a potato for 75 cents, a big baked potato for 75 cents.
Right, but you're leaving out one other component to this. I don't have to cook it.
Right, that's the big
there's
part.
No energy, I'm not using any energy to make it or anything, or the time. I mean, to me, when I saw that price, I thought it was pretty cheap.
But you do realize then this is the ultimate problem, is that people have offset the cost of their own labor
through
all these conveniences that have created all the problems in the first
that's
place.
True.
That's capitalism, baby.
But that's the problem with generally with our society, is that it's perceived that it's much cheaper to eat out or get processed foods and all these other things. And now we're not just talking about physical health. Think about the mental health of not spending that time with your family, spending that time in the car, going through the drive-through lane. Do you think your child is getting the same emotional stimulation by eating, a Happy Meal in the back of a minivan?
I can't speak for everyone else, but we tell campfire stories while we're in the drive-through.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, we're waiting.
There you go. All right, let's go to the phones. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Hey, guys.
Drew, what's up, sir?
Well, I'd say first, I think with products like McDonald's and the rest, I think like we have built into the cigarettes, I think you should put in, you should build in that cost in the tax to kind of isolate them from the insurance pool to cover that, that cost as a buffer.
Well,
I don't.
If you want to get Twinkies, newly reintroduced to the market, you're going to pay an extra. So
and,
now Twinkies are going to cost you $2 for a pack?
And I no, just enough to cover the insurance pool. And I would add, I think
$10 a pack.
I think anything coming
from
low
tar Twinkies,
and I'm sure Russ is going to protest what I'm about to say here, but I think the non-processed plant-based fats such as coconut oil and others should be exempt from this because we know they do not have the same effect as the saturated fats from animals, the stuff that's hydrogenated. It's not the same effect, and it's not as detrimental. And we found that coconut oils and stuff are even healthy in certain amounts. So I would add that as well. And what were you talking about, the specific cost of the food, Mike? In terms of, are you talking, were you saying something about to the effect of what food stamps cost, or, I mean, provider?
Provider. I don't remember saying anything about the
Ben said price. Something to the effect of $20 a month. Is that about food stamps, or?
No, we were talking about the idea that some people say or think that it's less expensive to eat out every meal than it is to cook your own meals.
I would argue it's going to be more expensive when you're paying for that bypass surgery down the road. I think
is part of the argument, right?
Let's look at the bigger picture of what's created in this process, the industrial complex for food, and all the smoke and the nasty stuff that gets put into the air, the unintended health consequences for those of us who don't even choose to eat as much of that industrial product so much. I would go so far as to argue breaking down that system into pieces and decentralizing it and localizing it. Even if you still had some fast food and had it more from a local basis, it would not be as harmful, possibly health-wise, because, you know, you're talking about fresher ingredients. They don't have to put in all those preservatives. One example I would actually give from this, now I don't know, but I think it might be a valid example, is I don't know if any of you know about the way In-N-Out Burger runs their distribution chain.
There aren't any In-N-Out Burgers in town, are there?
No, but
it's a West Coast franchise, right?
Yeah, they grow only as fast as their supply chain expands. They have like a rule that they will only go so far for their supply chain. So you're getting something that's fresh, that's not laden with preservatives or having to be frozen or to extend the shelf life. I think that would have a substantial effect, even if it is fast food. It's not as bad. You're going to probably pay a little bit more, but all of this stuff.
What do you think about? What do you think about lab-grown beef?
Yeah, I heard something.
Yeah,
I
would just as soon. I may be a vegan, but I would just as soon have people kill animals and eat them out in the wild or whatever, and know where their animals coming from than know where no one than. Eat one from a test tube. I'm sorry, I'd just as soon trust a rancher than I would someone in a pharmaceutical lab making this.
I mean, it would probably have a taste similar to that $12 steak and potatoes item that you saw on that menu.
Well, they
earlier.
Actually think it tastes worse. I mean, I know you're joking, but right now someone had tasted it and they thought it tasted something like a squid. It costs a lot. I don't know
some
if anyone
like
heard about this, but they just recently grew one. And they said, yeah, it tasted like a squid or something.
Yeah, but that's early phase. I mean, they'll interject some lemon
DNA. I'm older.
They'll put some lemon DNA, a little garlic DNA in there, and the next thing you know, it'll come out tasting like, whoa, is this Oklahoma Joe's? Like, just, like, I just peeled it off the wall, and it tastes like...
Oh, man.
I'm not advocating. I'm just saying that's where science is going to do with that, right? They're going
to,
like...
So, are you a vegan, Drew?
Yes, I am,
have
and
you,
I'm proud to
have
be
you
one.
Ever heard of,
I'm not a moral one. I'm a health one.
I'm glad to hear that. Have you ever heard of castoreum?
I assume you're referring to the cat as something coming from the castor bean, which is toxic.
No, the castor bean. Castoreum.
Right.
Castoreum is different. Do you know what castoreum is?
Is that the beaver?
How do you know this?
Because I've...
Hold on. So, castoreum is used as a raspberry flavoring in certain foods. And
right.
It
mm-hmm.
does not have to be labeled as what it is. It doesn't have to be included on the ingredient list. It is a raspberry flavoring that's considered as to be a natural flavoring. It does not have to be called artificial. It does not have to be listed according to the FDA. It is sourced from the anal gland of a beaver.
Yeah. Effectively called beaver anal juice in my house.
Damn. Do you all like that stuff? Do you get the powder?
No, but we were amazed to hear that very fact, that it's like in everything. I mean,
I told my wife that, and she got mad.
So much. In fact, another coloring that because the source I heard this was like this trivia thing, but
the cochineal,
well, there's a bug.
Yeah,
there's
beetles.
Like a beetle. Yeah.
Oh
that
yeah,
used
I never heard of
this.
Yeah.
Coloring and stuff.
Yeah,
that
Starbucks
like
got in trouble making red frappuccinos or something like that with this product. And again, it's for vegans and for anyone that doesn't want to consume a beaver anal gland.
Right.
But the real question is, what kind of sick bastard is like,
all
right, Steve, we went through the entire beaver and we haven't found a damn thing that tastes like strawberries.
Right.
I know you don't think, but let's go ahead and try out the anal gland and see what flavor we get here.
Oh, my God.
It's delicious.
It's just so crazy. It might work.
But, all right, Drew, we appreciate your phone call. You continue on with your veganism.
Yeah, I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, man.
Veganism's all right. Sometimes vegetarianism or veganism gets confused as a reason to eat French fries all day long. It's really hard, especially in our reality, to be able to consume, if you're not going to cook your own meals, a diet that's healthy and vegan. I mean, it's hard enough to do it if you're going to eat meat. Going out, it's almost impossible. Unless you're going to Cafe Gratitude. You ever heard of that place before?
Yes.
It's a goofy place. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You are on the radio.
Hey, this is Bill from Kansas City.
Hi, Bill.
What's up, man?
How you guys doing? I have a solution that would tip the scale, so to speak, on the fast food would be more expensive than eating at home. Is if we go ahead and we pay those fast food workers about $35 to $40 an hour, that would raise the price of eating out. What do you guys think?
I'm down. Can you get me an application to Burger King?
Sure. But as far as healthcare goes, I've always wondered this. I know it varies for everyone, but like the healthcare plan I have right now. It's excellent. I pay about $40 a month, and I have great coverage. The thing is, I pay about a little over $400 each paycheck in taxes. So we always talk about affordable health care. I think the best way would be if they actually cut taxes. As far as income, what's the word I'm looking for?
Redistribution.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this sounds bad, but I really don't care that a CEO makes $5 million. I don't understand what the outrage is. I really don't. I mean, maybe you can tell me what I'm missing here. I understand that some of the procedures that they do obviously are wrong, and that upsets me. But, if a guy is making $4 million, I don't... that doesn't bother me. I don't know why people are so concerned with what someone else is making, as long as they're making it honestly.
Well, I think that might be part of the problem. Right. You look at a company like Ben & Jerry's, the ice cream people, they had a... I think we were talking about this last week. They had this plan where they wanted to pay their CEO 10 times the amount of their lowest paid worker. So the guy wrapping the plastic ring around the ice cream before it goes into the freezer for shipping was making, a tenth of what the CEO was making. And they couldn't keep a CEO that was worth the salt to run the company at that wage. But on the flip side of that, if you're a CEO and you're like, well, clearly what we need to do to make, profits here, we need to raid the pension, we need to send our manufacturing base overseas, and we need to, destroy this river and waterway.
And I've increased my pay by 300%.
Right. And then, then I will, after I do all that, I've increased profitability, I'll destroy the bottom line by giving out bonuses to all the executives. I'll bankrupt the company, and then before I get removed by the board of directors, I'll get a golden parachute or of another $5 million. I mean, there's a certain culture within that, where it's vulturism or cannibalism or something along those lines. I don't think that should be rewarded. I mean, clearly, if you're running a profitable company that is doing a benefit to the economy and the community in which it operates, I mean, and you're the guy running the show and it's making $1 billion a year, you should clearly be compensated heavily for that. But when you're compensated for just being another, venture cannibalist, I don't see how that is something that we should revere. And it brings us back to the early part of the 21st century with a company like Enron, where you had this cult of the CEO and the cult of the executive, where these guys, like Jeffrey Skilling, was, perceived as some sort of rock star. Right. And this guy was so cool, but in reality, he was just a scam artist because that's what they were doing. Right. And that's a chunk of Wall Street. That's the nature of money being made on that level.
No, absolutely. And I'd like to interject that what Ben just said represents a range of types of companies and types of CEOs and the range of the situations. Because you clearly mentioned not like, oh, my God, look at these CEOs. They're all doing this or that. You talked about people who are doing and are justly compensated and people who are not and who are doing these accounting tricks to become, to do the profitability thing. And the same way that people, it's okay to be outraged that there's some... I remember seeing a story about some woman who was getting welfare from three different states, and her job basically consisted of going to these three different states and picking up her checks and running her scam. Well, that's obviously an outrage thing, but that doesn't mean we need to take it out on the person who isn't doing that, and that then let's just whitewash the whole or blanketly or use a blanket. What am I trying to say here?
Yeah, close enough.
To just like call welfare bad. I'm not calling CEOs bad. I'm not calling capitalism bad. But I think you got to appreciate the range and address specifically those problems, because it's so easy to say, well, the stuff that you were just talking about, the Skillings and the Ken Lays and those kinds of people, why, they're not that big of a deal. So, I mean, they're not everyone. So let's not go after corporations. No, we need to go after how the corporations are run so that range, so that we can address those, I don't want to call them anomalies because I think they're too common to be just like some weird thing that happens. There's a certain trend that's happening, and I think you do want to address that so that kind of stuff doesn't happen, or that you can try to keep it from happening.
Yeah, but you have to look at the governance of the company. So in other words, the board of directors, the shareholders are the ones that hold the CEO accountable. Okay. I mean, the point, I guess this comes back to the issue, what's the function of a corporation? Is it to do the public good? Or is it to make money for its shareholders and stockholders?
Well, if you go back to the history of the corporation, I mean, it did have to have some sort of public good initially.
Right. It has to provide some sort of some sort of good to the public. Now isn't the public partially to blame too, because they're still supporting, and they still support that product, aren't they standing behind and saying we don't care what this corrupt CEO is doing, or a banker, or anything like that?
There's a lot of facets to that. There's no doubt. Yeah, I mean, people take issue with Walmart all the time, and then still continue to shop there and say I have no other choice, or whatever it is. I mean, you know, the true way to, you know, make action is to do it financially. And, you know, if you are one person, you not shopping at Walmart might not make the impact. But if there are lots of people who are willing to go along with that, if you create, if you have some sort of coalition of folks that are willing to say no to that for these reasons, then you can actually make something happen. But generally speaking, people have 1,000 excuses for why they will continue to do something that they know is bad for them.
But even so, as people do that, Walmart and others are making changes, not like, all right, let's get behind this new thing, like let's go organic, but they're doing the things that they're doing. Whether it's as great or as pure as you would like, they are making changes because they are losing customers. It may not be, you know, everyone doing it, but when Walmart loses 5% or 10%, they're going to make changes. They're going to make changes when they start losing 1%, because that's the way that's the way they count their means. You know what I mean? Not the case.
No, exactly. And then I wanted to talk about one more thing. It was, you guys were talking about it right before I called in, and I'll listen off the air. But you know, every time we talked about, you know, GMOs and just different types of food products, I remember, you know, Russ would always call in and point out how the life expectancy continues to go up. So, you know, if you could kind of address that, I'll listen off the air.
All right, take care. I think when a part of what Bill said about life expectancy has a lot to do with quality of life, standard of living, and, you know, while life expectancy continues to go up, I mean, I think the later years of life are getting more and more uncomfortable and dependent upon drugs, and I think we're starting to see life expectancy decline to a certain degree. I mean, it's not a dramatic drop-off, but it's going to take 100 more years of people living and within where we're at now, because food hasn't really changed. But for the last, I mean, genetically modified food did not hit the shelves until the late 90s. You know, the way that we have become more and more dependent upon pharmaceuticals is relatively new. This isn't something that's been going on for multiple generations. They say over 70% of the country is on some sort of pill. This is, so these things will have their effects. We are going to see this manifest itself, and how it will come forth will be studied statistically for a long time. I mean, they say the oldest man in the world right now is a Bolivian goat herder who chews coca every day and has no teeth. I mean, why do people in Bolivia chew coca?
Pain relief.
No, I mean, it has everything to do with opening up your lungs, because you're high in altitude and there's very little oxygen, and it's also a hunger suppressant. You know, there's another...
That bush in Africa that people chew the leaves on?
Right, exactly.
The cat stuff.
The cot, and then there's also yerba mate, which is tea. These are all hunger suppressants that have a lot of minerals in them. I mean, coca...
Can you get those here?
Yerba mate you can. Cot is illegal, and coca is illegal as well.
Why is cot illegal?
It's a Schedule I drug, according to the DEA.
Does it also get you high, or is it just...
It has an effect. It's a stimulant similar to coca. And I don't know if it's ever purified the way coca leaves are to be turned into cocaine. I don't know. I know it's a popular thing in the Middle East, cot is. But again, it's a hunger suppressant, and it's something that has a lot of minerals and other nutrients in it. And these people who have very little money live for, you know, I mean, that's it's a very common thing for people who are, depend on these to have a long life and not have an abundance of food. A lot of times people eat too much food. It's a reality. But it was interesting.
I believe that.
While we were talking about the story of capitalism and CEOs and corporations, et cetera, you know, the there was a case where they lost $3.5 billion through tradings. JP Morgan did, when there was the London whale case. Yeah, $3.9 billion.
Is that the ones that were hiding their trading from their, like they were basically running two sets of books, even for their upper, even for their higher ups, they were.
Right, and they're now getting prosecuted. U.S. prosecutors charged two J.P. Morgan traders over the London whale incident, which, excuse me, was not $3.5 billion. It was $6 billion. Mm. Cost the U.S. bank more than $6 billion last year. Are they charging anybody with any type of power within the company? They're charging a couple of low-level guys. And that's the way it works. How many CEOs, how many executives got brought to justice when the manic depression of 2008 began? I mean, how many people were prosecuted for? I mean, it's just kind of it happens.
Yeah, but the bigger question to me is what kind of person does it take to run a corporation? In other words, the way I look at it, most people, it's nothing new, are followers.
I believe a sociopath.
Well, that's what it may take. But what I'm trying to say is like...
What? Is that the correct answer?
Well, I mean, that's what some people say. But I'm just saying, like, it's, you know... If it was that easy to run corporations, everybody would be running their own corporation.
Well, anyone can. Anyone can go get incorporated by Delaware.
This is true, but I mean, to run a successful business...
I mean, part of this requires cheating.
Well, that may be to get to the top or to keep your company going.
Right, to have some sort of monopoly of sorts. You know, I'm not sitting here. It's the idea that, okay, corporations are immense and powerful, but what then do they provide? I mean, are we just talking about we provide cheap products? We have a price point that, you know, our consumers can afford, and that's it.
Well, look at Ben & Jerry's, for example. I mean, they sold out to Unilever, or whatever it is, something. I mean, they sold out. And what do they provide? They provide a fattening, expensive treat.
Yeah, that has genetically modified ingredients in it. Yeah.
Well, and they were held up as an example of a great social company doing good for people, and yet they're basically pushing cocaine in small bottles to people.
Cool.
Tasty, but
Tasty Coke.
Tasty Coke.
Man, and you're listening to the Socialism Hour here on Community Radio, Communist Radio in the 21st century. It's about a minute or two before the 2 o'clock hour right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City.
My wife, Victoria, can tell you an interesting story about what happened to her mother's savings.
We were in Soviet Union because Soviet Union was broken and somebody took all money from all people.
They just took the money from the savings accounts and put it in the government accounts.
No, they disappeared. So it's been broken. It was different money system, rubly, and now every republic, post Soviet Union, they have different money. For example, in Ukraine we have hryvnias. Only Russia has ruble, and all money from Soviet Union, from my parents, they gave me present for future, my saving account, everything disappeared.
It's gone.
Gone.
We're talking who knows how much money. I mean,
billions and billions and billions.
And they did that in Greece, Cyprus? Cyprus. Just all right, we're going to clean out all savings accounts and.
Well, they just sliced,
We'll leave you a little
50% off. of your savings account, so they could, you know, pay the European Union, so they could continue to be a part of the club.
Well, to me the situation is that, you know, we people in every country are not equal to each other, and that's where the problem is. You're always going to have